This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee Public Radio. Good morning, I'm Mitch Tyke.
And I'm Audrey Nowakowski. There are significant racial and ethnic tensions in this country and in the world today, but the current climate is still a far sight different than what this country went through in the days of Jim Crow. Lynchings of African Americans were not uncommon in the South well into the last century.
What is less known is that they happened in the North as well. The story of one of the only known survivors of a lynching has been part of the fabric of Milwaukee for some time. James Cameron's experience happened in Indiana, but he settled here later in life, and the museum he opened, America's Black Holocaust Museum, was based here.
Its online component and the organization that runs it works to tell that story even today. Saturday marks the late James Cameron's 103rd birthday, and the museum will mark it with its annual Founders Day program.
Reggie Jackson is the museum's head griot, and Fran Kaplan coordinates the virtual museum. They join us in the studio now. Welcome to you both.
Thank you, Mitch.
Yeah, thanks, Mitch.
So we should start with a refresher on the story of James Cameron, who was the founder of America's Black Holocaust Museum. He was a Wisconsin native, but the defining story of his early life took place while he was growing up in Indiana.
Yeah, as a young boy at the age of 16, he was the victim of a lynching that he fortunately survived. His two friends, Abram Smith and Thomas Shipp, ended up not surviving that lynching. It happened on August 7th, 1930, in a little town called Marion, Indiana. And it was a defining moment in his life and really kind of changed the direction that he was moving on in many different ways and left a legacy with him that he wanted to make sure that people would remember those types of events moving forward. So he founded the museum as a result of that lynching that he survived and some other things that happened during the course of his life as well.
Even today, people are probably still surprised to hear this story, at least in so much as it happened in Indiana and not where we typically think of you know, the history of lynchings in this country.
Yes. People in the North tend to think of lynchings as a Southern phenomenon, but actually they happened all over the country, including in the West. And in the Midwest, where we are, there were some very famous lynchings. Probably more of them took place in the South, but, you know, there were well over 5,000 recorded lynchings during the Jim Crow period. That's not an insignificant number, and many of them were not recorded.
He first wrote the story of that time in 1982. It is a book that you annotated for its third edition, which came out a couple of years ago. What was his initial hope for sharing this story?
Well, he knew that the story he was telling was a story that no one else was able to tell. He was the only known survivor of a lynching, and he actually wrote the book while he was a young kid. He was still a teenager when he wrote the story when he was in prison. And he wanted to be able to have people remember the details of that while it was still fresh in his mind. And so we wanted to kind of, you know, bring the book back and be able to kind of contextualize it so that people would kind of understand what was going on in the 1930s around the country that led to these large numbers of lynchings. And we've added additional chapters that Dr. Cameron had written that he never put in either the first or second edition as well.
And I realized I misspoke. I said he wrote the book, and he published the book in 1982, the book having been written decades before.
He actually finished the first round of writing when he was 21. You know, the comparison that I like to make, most of us growing up read The Diary of Anne Frank or The Diary of a Young Girl by Anne Frank, which is, of course, an intimate account of one teenager's experience of man's inhumanity to man, the Nazi Holocaust. And in some ways, this is the diary of the Black Holocaust, because really no one else has written a book about growing up under Jim Crow, which is extreme segregation and racial terrorism, like Dr. Cameron was able to write it, because he experienced some of the worst of that personally, not just the lynching, but some other things. And yet, he was a very playful person. He had a sense of humor. I don't know if you noticed in the book, sometimes he can be very funny. It's not all grim, but it certainly is an important look to understanding. He lived both in the North and the South, so it's a, you know, you... you get a sense of what Jim Crow was like to live under as a kid growing up in those places. And then he moved to Wisconsin. He is actually born in La Crosse, but he moved to Wisconsin, back to Wisconsin, in 1952.
Right. He had intended to move to Canada, right?
Yes. He was pretty tired of organizing in the United States, trying. He organized a bunch of NAACP chapters, and he was very, very active in the 1940s in civil rights. And
which is far before most of us think that there was a lot of activity in
exactly,
civil rights.
Exactly. And it was tough. He started north to go look for a place to be. But Milwaukee at that time had lots of jobs. And so he was part of the migration to Milwaukee. And he raised his five children here, sent them all to college. I mean, you know, this was a successful place for him to be.
It is not insignificant. You mentioned the Nazi Holocaust, the killings of some 6 million Jews and other and people of other backgrounds during World War II. It's not insignificant that he felt some relationship between the Black Holocaust and that Holocaust to the degree that he traveled to Israel, right?
Yes.
Yeah. In 1979, he traveled there on a pilgrimage with his wife to the Holy Land. They were devout Catholics and had always wanted to travel there. And while they were there, they visited Yad Vashem, the Holocaust Memorial. And he told me that he left that facility in tears and was very emotional about what he had seen, and turned to Virginia, his wife, and said, "We need a museum like this in America to tell what happened to Black people."
So why do you think his story, the story of his surviving this lynching, is so vital to know today? And I guess more broadly, where do you see the importance of that story versus all the other stories like it and maybe unlike it and the broader issues of racial injustice today?
I think a big part of it that makes him stand out is a story of him redeeming himself. And kind of reconciling with the past. This is a big part of his legacy, is that we don't just talk about these ugly things just for the sake of talking about them. We do them as this attempt to kind of repair from the damages that have been done. And that was a big part of his life. He wanted to reach out and make sure that people knew that he didn't have hatred in his heart about what happened. All of the experiences that he went through during the Jim Crow era, the lynching that he survived, he was able to kind of take those things in and recognize that that hatred was killing him on the inside, and he transformed himself in a very positive way. And that was the message that he always sent out, was a very positive message about redemption, reconciliation, repair.
The thing that really stays with me from the book that this edition of the book that he had written, there are images of lynchings, including the one from that he could very well have died in. And I think the point that he makes is that, you know, we look at the white people who are gathered around and we're kind of horrified to see their faces. And it's easy to stop at that point and never look at the people who have been hanged. And maybe it's an obvious question, but why is it so important not to turn the page after just looking at these people who have committed this horrible act?
All around the world, there are memorials to people who have died as a result of mass atrocity. In the United States alone, there are 250 Jewish museums about the Holocaust, just in the United States. When Dr. Cameron visited Yad Vashem, which is a large Holocaust memorial museum in Jerusalem, one of the things that impressed him there was the Garden of the Righteous Gentiles. And that is a memorial to those people who saved Jews, hid Jews in Europe at great risk to their lives and their families' lives. Cameron believed very deeply in the promise of America, and he believed that we needed to work together. He saw America, white and black and everything else, he saw as what he called one single and sacred nationality. So that's what we do at America's Black Holocaust Museum, is help people like at Yad Vashem to contextualize what happened in terms of the lived experience of people of African descent in this country, not just in the past, but how the past is still with us, unfortunately. People sometimes don't realize how long, how many generations, 16 generations of black children and white children were born during this period of slavery. That's a lot of our culture that's embedded in that relationship. So what we do at America's Black Holocaust Museum is to help people understand that past and also to honor the victims because, as Reggie said, until you do that, until you face directly what's happened, it's really hard to repair it. You know, every therapist knows that. You got to face what's troubling you in order to heal.
That's part of what's very difficult about having these conversations about race and racism is, you know, people often would say to me when the physical museum was open that, you know, the lynching images were there for shock value, but they really weren't. They were part of American history. And one of the biggest differences I noticed in terms of how people looked at those images is that the adults spent very little time looking at the images, but children who were there would spend a significant amount of time, and they would kind of pick the images apart and notice things that adults wouldn't notice. They would ask much deeper, more probing questions than the adults would. So I think it's very hard for us to kind of reconcile that those things were so common. But it's part of the trauma that our nation has endured, and we have to be willing to talk about that in an honest way in order to get past it, to understand how we got to where we are today.
You have this Founders Day event going on. It's on Saturday, which would have been James Cameron's 103rd birthday, if my math is correct. What are your hopes for the events of that day?
Well, every year we have a different theme, but they're all it's all geared to learning about what we can do to repair that history and to reconcile. And so this year, what we're doing is bringing together people from all over the country who are commemorating lynchings and other mass atrocities. For instance, we're including the Sikh Temple Massacre in this. So we have both local presenters, like Pardeep Kaleka, whose father was killed in that massacre by a white supremacist. And we have people coming from around the country who have been doing things like in Duluth, Minnesota. As you point out, there are not that many lynchings that are known about in the North, but a very famous lynching is what took place in Duluth of three circus workers. Again, there was another picture of white people hanging around looking proud of a trophy. It's pretty shocking. And what Duluth has done, Duluth is a relatively small town and you know, small city in Minnesota. And what they've done is they've put a memorial plaza in downtown Duluth, if you can imagine, with life-size bas-reliefs of the three men who were murdered there. And they've had reconciliation ceremonies between the descendants of those people who were the lynchers and the descendants of those people who were lynched. So we are bringing both sides of that to Milwaukee to talk about that. There's many other kinds of commemorative projects that are going on similarly. We're also bringing people to talk about how, for instance, in an all-white suburb of Milwaukee, can you teach African-American history? So the centerpiece of this Founders Day is going to be a film called Always in Season, which is about some lynchings in the past and how people have worked on reconciling. And it's also about how this plays out in the present, how racial terrorism is still unfortunately with us and how it plays out and what people are trying to do about that now.
What's the ultimate hope for the museum? Are you still working towards the idea of adding another bricks and mortar facility down the road?
Yeah, absolutely. That's part of what we do. We're hoping that with the development that's taking place in Bronzeville, that we'll have a new home late spring, early summer of next year. But people have to understand, though, that we do so much other stuff. We've been a museum without walls now since 2008, and we've done incredible work putting together a group of all-volunteer team that's really had a very large impact in terms of bringing people together to talk about these issues in Milwaukee. We have the virtual museum, which has been online for 5 years now.
This will be our fifth birthday. Saturday.
And it's been hugely successful, been visited by just about every country on the planet Earth. used as a resource by teachers around the world. We have our Griot to Go speakers program. We do a lot of engagement of people around conversations related to race, racism, African-American history. We have our Life Rights Press, which we use to publish Dr. Cameron's book. We have multitudes of dialogues where we bring people from diverse communities together to talk about issues related to race and racism. So there's a lot of work that we're doing outside of just having that physical museum. And even as we move forward with the physical museum reopening, obviously these other things will continue to be a huge part of what we do as well.
I've been working doing anti-racism work for 50 years now. And I have never seen as much concern and interest and curiosity and openness on the part of white people to the lived experience of African Americans and to talking frankly about that and what we can do. And as hard as the times are right now politically, that's the one bright spot that I'm very glad to see, is I think that the advent of the camera phone and social media has made it easier for people, white people, to see what black people's lives are like more from the inside and how they're impacted by the racial issues that we've inherited. There's a lot more courage in facing this now and a lot more hope that we can change it than I've ever seen in my lifetime of this work.
Well, that was a nice optimistic note to end on. Fran Kaplan and Reggie Jackson, thank you both so much, and really best of luck in your work.
Thanks, Mitch.
Thanks, Mitch.
Reggie Jackson and Fran Kaplan of America's Black Holocaust Museum. The organization holds its annual Founders Day event in honor of James Cameron this Saturday at Centennial Hall at the Milwaukee Public Library. There's a link to more information from WUWM.com. Now,